As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, welcome to The Ruck. Hope you're all staying really well out there, bearing up. I think we're in the 8th or 9th week of lockdown, and hoping and praying that we'll be back soon with real rugby. We start with the incredible news from this morning's Mail, the breakthrough we've been waiting for, the diet that could help you beat Corona by the Hairy Bikers. So the Hairy Bikers apparently are now ahead of the curve. Soon we'll all be able to play at 100%. It'll be the end of the pandemic and rugby will be back to normal thanks to a diet from two scruffy Geordie saps. who wants medical experts when you've got those two? Another thing, last night at midnight, the government issued a statement which does affect rugby and says basically that without any testing procedures, rugby can go ahead or contact sports can go ahead. And Lawrence, I think what they're allowing is just a limited man-on-man contact in training sessions. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think more importantly, what they're allowing, I mean, it's a positive step. Let's just say, I see it as a positive step anyway, even though it was released at midnight last night. But I think what it's doing is passing the responsibility to the administrators of each individual sport. The fact that they're saying that they don't have to have a testing procedure. You know, the Premier League footballers have already been tested twice weekly at a cost of about £4 million. And a similar programme is not required under this new government guideline for elite sports. So, you know, it's up to rugby now and the people that are organising, you know, Operation Restart to take on board whatever those recommendations are from the government and to decide, you know, to what extent the sport needs to move forward and at what time, I guess. I do see it as positive. The latest I'm hearing from, you know, people that are close to some of those conversations is that they may be looking to start as late as August with a final in sort of mid-October. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, as you've said, rugby can't just jump straight back in. It's got to take, you know, the necessary precautionary steps, because if you know what we can't have is a season that starts and then stops again, because that would be quite a sort of fatal and almost catastrophic blow to the whole of the sport.
Okay, we've got with us as well as Lawrence, got Owen Slot and Stuart Barnes. So Stuart, just something that Lawrence and you possibly disagree on, that you were saying today, for goodness sake, forget the rest of the season. There's 9 games left in the Premiership plus a possible 2 playoff games. I think there's the quarterfinal, semis, and final Europe. And your view was, let's forget that. It all becomes a little bit complicated and harsh. We'll come back to Lawrence on that in a second. Just give us the basis of that view, Stuart.
Well, like Lawrence, I've sort of predicated that even if things go fairly positively in terms of kicking off in mid-August, you're talking about October the 24th. It is realistically a final date around then. You're relying on no internationals at Twickenham before. There probably won't be any. But it's not just about this season, Steve. I think we've got to look at rugby now at a professional level, not just this season, but a chunk almost 2020 and 2021. This season kicks off again, and our next one doesn't kick off until effectively November. You are running, this train is just running at 100 miles an hour and it's going to crash into the Six Nations. It doesn't work. I mean, we're talking about when this season finishes. When the hell is the next one going to finish? And how is it going to finish? you're going to have to play through the Six Nations and have absolutely risible standards of rugby, second teams all the time. Are they going to try and have this horrendous midweek rugby where suddenly player welfare means absolutely nothing? How do we get to the Lions tour, which I think we all want to see as a panacea to make us smile? How do we get there, playing through to the end of October, the 2020 season, straight through into 2021? And if that's starting 10 weeks late or something, then where do we catch up the time? And if we don't catch up the time, the reality is your final is going to be after the Lions test series.
In your capacity as at WAS, you'll be desperate for cash flow, etc. How do you sort out the big mess that Stuart's outlined there?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't disagree with Stuart. I'm not personally, whether regardless of my role as a working for BT's rugby team, or actually in my capacity as a board director at WAS, I'm not suggesting that it's imperative that the season restarts. I don't believe that at all. I think that it's gone beyond that point now, and I would be very comfortable trying to get the schedule sorted out for next season. And Stuart wrote a really interesting piece in the Times about BT stepping up.
It's not going that far.
And being a true partner. And, far be it for me to speak on behalf of the people at BT, but there's 1 year left on the TV contract. And, I believe negotiations were taking place pre-coronavirus to extend that by another 4 years. Now, in the true sense of partnership, there's nothing to stop BT from re-entering into those negotiations now, signing a new five-year deal and maybe paying the clubs some money up front and smoothing the their financial return out over the remaining 4 or 5 years of their deal, so that the clubs can rest a little bit easier than they are currently, and they can, everyone, together, can focus on creating a calendar and a product that is that is even better than what we've seen. Because quite honestly, if you're the broadcaster, you should be the one dictating when the season starts and finishes, and you should be the one deciding when the international breaks are. Because at the moment, let's be honest, we've all been moaning for years that the season is a mess, regardless of coronavirus. It's a mess, and it needs to be resolved. And I think, to Stuart's point, I think we can resolve it once and for all, but let's not beat about it. There is a lot of financial pressures, and the TV company, in our case BT, can really step up and make a big difference here.
Owen, do you see yourself reporting on the remainder of the current season for the Times?
Owen, just want to say hi first. I thought you were ignoring me for a little bit. I was sitting on my end of line, being a very good boy, waiting for you to come to me. So, hello, Jonesy. How are you? I've missed you.
Okay.
You're looking absolutely dynamite in your Zoom shed.
Thank you.
Do I expect to be reporting on the rest of the season? Yes, I think there'll be some kind of a season. I don't know how much or what it is. The powers that be want to get it on because they want the TV money, but they also come to the conclusion that actually the TV money doesn't really do much for them, because it's almost as expensive to come out of furlough and play as it is not. So there's that question. I think from a sort of marketing and sort of goodwill point of view, and because they talk so much of it, I think they do want to come out. But it's stretching longer and longer, and we're back in the situation where the clubs can't seem to agree on how to come back, how long it's going to take to come back, what sort of, the competition is going to start, what the competition is going to look like. So, yeah, we're talking about another messy Premiership disagreement.
Yesterday, the chairman of Huddersfield Town Football Club was surveying the scene and said he expects 50 or 60 institutions in the Football League to go to the wall. That was a grim number. Do you expect to be reporting next season on all the major sporting institutions in rugby that exist at the moment? Or do you think some will go to the wall?
Yeah, I think some will go to the wall. There's a lot of chatter about, there's 13 Premiership clubs, 12 would be better, which is a pretty harsh way of looking at it, but everyone knows it. Or will we end up at 10? I'm also hearing about certain clubs releasing loads of players for next season as a further way of cutting their costs. Yeah, we've known how poor the finances were before coronavirus. So if one or two or more go out of business as a result of it, then it's no surprise. We've seen it coming.
Lawrence, you also feel you'll be restarting as a broadcaster in front of empty stadiums. And what do you think of, BT are covering the Bundesliga. Sky have also shown golf, the Bundesliga with no crowd and golf with no caddies. What's your view? Is it really sport when there's no one there?
Well, I think my view is that we'll be apologising every 10 seconds for the industrial language that's appearing on the... on our TV screens, and we have to do that to the to Ofcom. But it's far from ideal. There's lots of words that you can describe about live sport and the skill and the character and etc. But atmosphere is also one. And I've been watching Bundesliga football, signed up with a fantasy team, and on players I've never heard of, obviously. And it's a difficult watch, isn't it, really? It's not ideal. And rugby, I mean, in one way, it'd be quite fascinating because you'd get to hear every single word that's said by the players. And it'd be lovely to hear, forwards turning around to backs and giving them a hard time when they're messing up. And similarly, it'd be lovely to hear backs turning around to their forwards and, giving them a rocket up the backside when they get knocked back behind the game line. So in one way, I think it is quite fascinating to hear those things, which possibly we're not able to pick up necessarily when the crowds are there. But on the other hand, rugby, more than anything, relies on that kind of gladiatorial atmosphere. And if you take away the crowd, it's not Rome, is it?
Stuart, A, would it feel like real rugby to you as a broadcaster? Would it feel like real rugby or almost like an excuse? And B, a supplementary, heard last week in the Times from Martin Ziegler, that World Rugby allegedly were trying to devise a form of rugby which didn't have scrums and balls. I think we both know that will never happen. But what's the new era look like to you?
The law changes, I'm going to just dismiss. World Rugby, I think, probably, as in the way in our global progress, we go about one step forward and two back. World Rugby go one forward and three back, and that's a few more backward steps and it'll amount to nothing. I'm afraid the days of the IRB are almost days we pine for. It's disappointing. But anyway, to happier moments, I think that it will feel like rugby. Well, essentially, it won't sound like rugby for a lot of people. Lawrence's point about the atmosphere is important. I think rugby union has a lot of errors because it has a lot of intense pressure applied by one side on the other, team without the ball. And I think, first of all, fans watching it on telly will think, geez, he missed touch, he threw a forward pass when he didn't need to. And the skill level in professional rugby, which is pretty poor compared to something like, say, tennis and golf, initially will be concerned with that. But I think then what we'll pick up and what will fascinate, and Lawrence mentioned it, and I wrote a piece that said, hearing rugby as opposed to seeing rugby. Now, when I go to a training session, I'm fascinated. Lawrence will know the cacophony in a defensive session, all the talk. And I think 99% of television viewers and rugby fans won't understand quite how much talk there is throughout the game. And rugby is a very, very noisy sport. And I think for a few weeks, there will be a definite novelty factor when we'll be hearing rugby as well as seeing it. And I'm intrigued with that. And the other thing I would say, Lawrence mentioned the bad language. He's absolutely right. Everybody in the world swears, but Ofcom doesn't seem to understand that rugby players and footballers are different. So, you say bloody and it, and you get your producer in the ear saying, for God's sake, apologise, someone said bloody. So we could end up with the referee's mic turned down because that's the prime mic that picks up all the players. Yeah. But if we turn the referee's mic down, we won't hear that endless twittering crap from referees using first name terms throughout.
Hang on a sec. Do you think that we'll start to understand players in a better or slightly different way? Because this whole thing of what you're hearing, people say, Owen Farrell is the best communicator out there. He's always talking. Well, we don't really hear that. We hear him complaining to refs. So we hear Marrow's endless kind of motivation, but we don't hear much more than that. And people always say, oh, Will Greenwood was one of the best communicators in the game, always talking to Johnny, telling him what to do. Well, that's what people said. I mean, personally, I watched enough of those games. I hardly ever heard anything just because that wasn't available to us in the stand. So do you think is that part of the new interest that we'll be slightly reassessing players from that point of view?
It's still a substitute for 80,000 people getting into it passionately.
Yeah, but Owen does have a point, Steve, in the sense if you really... Now, right now, when we talk about second rows, we talk about winning lineouts, hitting rights, we talk about scrum halves kicking and passing and centres doing that. We talk about the skills we can see. What we don't talk about are the intangibles, and communication is an absolutely key intangible. And what I like about it as well, when directors of rugby love to say to journalists, you don't know the other bits that are going on, you just see so-and-so. Well, actually, hearing the game, we'll pick up a lot more, and we'll know whether Farrell is as great a communicator as we're told, and whether Atoje is the sort of man to inspire. So I think, you know, it's not the same, Steve, as 80,000, and I think we'll lose far more than we'll gain, but what we'll gain will be fascinating.
Okay. Lawrence, can I just go on to a fair point? Can I just go on to sort of financial news? And it's probably better news. Last week, there were rumours that CVC were not going to come in and go ahead with signing the Guinness Pro 14. Not only did they sign, but they signed for exactly the same amount as was expected before coronavirus. Mm. Is it, as far as you know, is it good news that CVC have stuck with it and they've not made big deductions in terms of the effect of the virus, and that appear to be possibly a saviour in the new era?
I think it's obviously positive news for the Pro 14, isn't it? And it does have an impact on rugby in the wider sense. I mean, I'm no hedge funder or certainly no, you know, financial analyst, but from seeing what CVC did with Formula One, they're not in the, you know, they're not in it to make money in the short term. They're in it for much more for the longer haul. So having already made a significant investment in Premiership rugby, and obviously having already opened up negotiations all over the world with every single union and structure and competition in the sport, you know, what they've obviously felt is they're not about to pull out now. So no, I think it is a positive move, and great news for the Pro 14. But as I said, I think they're looking at this, you know, in much more longer term, and you know, clearly they feel that that rugby has a very strong life post the Corona crisis, whenever that might be.
Lawrence, in terms of the money, where it goes, I mean, there are 12 clubs or 13 clubs, and the deal has been signed by Premiership Rugby. I noticed that this morning the Scottish Rugby Union was saying, oh, this is great, and don't forget, this money will be used for the betterment of the sport. And they were talking about the grassroots, universities, etc. Surely this money is for the professional arm of the game and the professional elite arm of the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure CVC have paid to better the game of rugby at every single level. That's for sure. Every pitch I've ever heard in terms of winning the Olympic Games rights or TV rights or whatever it is talks about legacy and talks about funding throughout the game. And then once the competition's over, everyone sort of gets in their cars and trots off into the sunset. So, you know, for me, the priorities for rugby are obviously are changing day by day in terms of the financial priorities. But the sport, and I maintain this point, the sport has not grown exponentially, club rugby in this country, for a long, long time. You know, the crowds have got bigger in finals only because the stadium capacities have got bigger. I think the biggest chunk that rugby needs to invest in is in attracting new audiences and growing the sport. And there's lots of different ways of doing that. And as I understand, CVC's investment in rugby, there was going to be a pot of money in the region of about £40 to £50 million that was going to be devoted to marketing and growing the game. Now, whether that pot still exists now is a moot point, because clearly the financial pressures that have come on board, you know, the clubs would say, well, look, we need to survive before we grow the game. So, you know, for me, you know, part of CVC's role is to make sure that the sport is watched by by the younger generation and new audiences. And if there is one criticism of the Premiership, I don't think any more people are watching the sport now than were watching it when Martin Johnson was strutting his stuff or guys in the era that I played in. So I think there is a duty to continually grow the sport. And by that, you've got to market the game outside of the channel that it's showed on. Because there's only a certain number of people that watch BT Sport. And, you know, there's a lot of other rugby fans who could be brought to the game.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Owen, George Cruz is now confirming that he's going to go to Japan, which is quite a thing because he's not 34. He played very well at the World Cup and should be in his prime. Do you find that odd that he's going? I mean, it's not that sensational a story because he's been talking about it for ages. But A, do you think it's odd he's going? And B, who does that let in with a chance for the England team, Slotty?
It's not such a surprise, is it? Because when he came off the pitch after his last England game against Wales, he actually waved to the crowd as if he was saying goodbye to them. It's not a well-kept secret. Given what's happened with Saracens, I think it's a brilliant move for him because he wouldn't want to play in the Championship for a season and he's got an opportunity to do something really different and interesting. So I think good for him. You say it's not like a retirement package for him. He's signed, I think, for 1 year with an option of two. So, and he's 30 years old now, so he could come back at the age of 31 and fight his way back into the England squad. Though, you know, the point is, you know, he's Marrow's the England's number one lock, and then probably you'd say Courtney Laws would be number two, though he's of an age, and then you've got Joe Launchbury and George Cruz. Probably George Cruz will be third spot, and he'll lose that spot for a season, and other players will come through. You know, Charlie Eales is a player that coaches really like, but I don't think he's ever really done it for England yet.
No.
Maybe he finally gets a run and proves his worth. You know, going back to a previous conversation, Eales is one of these players who we hear is a great communicator and does all that stuff that we hear about but can't see. So maybe it's him, you know, a little further down the line than, you know, the next big great lock that we've been sort of hearing and talking about for a little while now Cruz's Saracens teammate Joel Kapoku, who's 20 or 21, I think, and he's a phenomenal athlete, it's very much from the Marrow mould. So maybe that gives him the chance to come through. I mean, I suppose is it a gamble for Cruz to go and think he can come back and get back in? I think it is, but maybe he's seen his international career dwindling at the same time and has decided to have a chance on other world experiences. I mean, I'd take a year abroad if I was given one right now.
I don't think it's a gamble. Far from being a gamble. I think a year in Japan can, you know, at the age of 30, a year in Japan can prolong your international career rather than damage it. Because, you know, if you pop over to Japan and play a dozen games at the intensity that they're played at over there, George Cruz might well come back in a year. He may well extend it. He's got an option to extend it for one more season after that if he's enjoying himself. And he'll take a look back at the Premiership and see what's going on. But having played back-to-back Premiership and European seasons myself for many years, he'll probably come back and slot straight back into the squad because there'll be four or five quite significant injuries in that position.
I suppose one point on that is that you have some coaches who like to build their team, and once you're in it, and it's quite hard to break in. Whereas I think Eddie's not really from that mould at all, and I think you might have been out of the picture for a while, but if you come back in, then you're in. I mean, look how long it took Brad Shields to get into the team. You know, all he had to do was get on a plane from New Zealand and he was in. So I do agree with you there, Lawrence, that out of sight doesn't mean out of mind.
So I was mentioning Gloucester, and we all tend to be fairly well disposed to Gloucester because I think we all know what a brilliant thing it would be if they were really contending. And I don't mean top six, I mean for the top two. That day has been postponed for so long. Ackerman came and we thought, well, this guy's got a record. This could be the guy who finally gets hold of them. Was it not really, really disappointing to hear that project is now over and Ackerman's gone?
Yeah, I'm very disappointed for a few reasons. Primarily, I just get so fed up when clubs and boards offer new contracts, someone signs them to take financial security, and then lo and behold, he said for personal reasons, it's a way of telling us in the media, please don't pry into why I'm breaking my contract and going to Japan. And in its own way, you know, it's tearing up a contract. I think it's every bit as unwholesome as drug taking in sport. I think it's as immoral. You know, it's a world, isn't it, where, you know, financial might is right. We go back to England, who boasted about taking Eddie Jones out of Western Stormers because they had the money just take him. They boasted about it. This is not the way to... this is not the way to develop sport. It is not the image for sport. So Ackerman going to Japan, as he did, Steve, disappoints me hugely. People are saying, well, they're ninth in the Premiership at the moment. They have been scruffy. Things haven't gone well. I've heard quite a lot of disaffection from Gloucester players about the influence of his son. But nevertheless, David Humphreys made a decision last year. He signed him up. And unless Gloucester are saying, and maybe they are thinking, hey, well, we'll get out of this extra money. Even so, the fact that he went there and said, I've got other options, can I go? I find unedifying. I don't like it. And it's not just Ackerman, it's the whole softness of contracts. What are the points? If one of you can tell me what is the point of a contract anymore, because I don't know anyone in the world of sport who isn't free with their agent to go and just tear it up and walk away.
You know, if you look back in history, particularly in rugby, the most successful teams that can't conquer the titles or Europe if you're not united from within. And clearly, I'm not quite sure what's happened at Gloucester, but there's obviously a situation where Ackerman felt, maybe last season and the season before, that he had the confidence of the owner and of the CEO. And I think over a period of the last 12 months, you know, he's obviously clearly felt that unity and that confidence that perhaps they gave him 12 months ago doesn't exist, because they didn't exactly stop him from walking out the door, did they, really? So it whiffs a little bit of something internal going on there, like a bit of a mutiny. And to have a successful rugby club, you need the senior players to be totally at one with the coaching staff. When Warren Gatland was running WASC with Sean Edwards, we had a group of a very tight senior playing group. And, you know, we challenged each other. They challenged us. We sorted our differences out together in a room and we went out on the training field. And we didn't go running over to the CEO or running over to our owner and moaning about the fact that we had some issues on the coaching side. You just sort it out with your coaches. And for that, I feel very disappointed. It's a distinct lack of leadership from the senior playing group. And if they want to go in a different direction, then there's ways and means about going about it.
Owen, who's the next, Gloucester saviour? Who, in your opinion, might get in there and actually kick a few backsides and get them up to where they could be? Is there anyone? Is there a line of coaches waiting?
I don't think anyone's going to get them up to where you're suggesting, because I think it's one of the clubs that's most desperately struggling with the new financial circumstances. And I think Gloucester will be cutting their cloth accordingly. And that's one of the reasons why they did let Ackerman go. So that lovely season when they got into the playoffs and we thought this is the Gloucester relaunch, I think that was a temporary thing. But who's going to be next? Well, there's a lot of talk of Barnes. You wrote about this last week, didn't you? About Rory Teague being the coming man, which is quite possible. Very, very highly rated English coach. And there is talk of Rob Howley as well, which I think is really interesting. Can't quite get my head around that. Lawrence might have a view, so, you know, as well as anyone on this pod.
Yeah, I mean, Gloucester are like the Munster of English rugby, aren't they, really? They've got this incredible following that if you galvanised it in the right way, you know, that in itself emotionally could carry you to a dozen victories a season at least. You know, it's not rocket science. You know, when I first took up the sport, it was the most, fearsome atmosphere in the whole of club rugby, but that's not something we're going to have now for a few months or a few years. So yeah, look, they've got a very talented playing squad. I don't think you know Gloucester or any other teams will be adding massively to their playing squads in the next 12 months. So it's a question of sticking with what you've got. So I think all the coach, you know, Wasps have done the same with Lee Blackett because they did a global search of all those who were available and didn't feel that there was anyone that they needed to rush into bringing in. So I think Gloucester will do the same. I think the key question is, can they get more out of the playing group than they've managed to do over the last 12 to 18 months? Because let's be honest, they challenged, but they were nowhere near the top. I mean, they got to fourth spot and then they were completely blown away. So they were a long way away from winning any silverware, quite frankly.
Maybe Michael Checker's the answer. As you'll have noticed from my outstanding interview in the Times last week, he's a quite keen on a new job and wouldn't mind coming to England. Where do you reckon he might pop up?
Yeah, but hang on a minute. We're all talking, and you just said it, Owen, we're talking about clubs having to cut their cloth accordingly to coronavirus. There's money going down. And then you see in the papers, they're saying, you know, can we get Cockers? Can we get Stuart Lancaster, Rob Howley, Michael Checker? Gloucester aren't a rich club. That's why Rory Teague makes sense, because they can get a bloke who knows the club inside out and can go up there. This is not a time when Gloucester go and break a bank. And I like the idea of Rob Howley, Jonesy, but I think he might be the right man at the wrong time. And Teague fits Gloucester's build, because I don't think Gloucester at the moment are thinking, how do we take the Premiership by storm? How are we the top team in the league in 2 years? I think Gloucester are thinking, how do we sustain ourselves? How do we survive this? And if they can be sixth or seventh, Jonesy, for a couple of years, I think they'll be extremely happy.
Chaps, I think that's we covered all the bases there, really. But there's just one more thing just to get out. We're pretty depressed about lockdown and obviously the casualty list, etc. There's a certain number of green shoots in terms of rugby. I know it's nothing compared to the losses, but we said today that there's just a certain relaxation in terms of rugby training. CVC have certainly got potential to help out in the recovery. There's also talk that at last the Six Nations, the Rugby Championship, are getting together. Do you think that it is still savable as a proper professional sport with prospects going forward, provided the right decisions are being made now? Because surely in this space, we have to sort out the whole of rugby in the future. Have we got the ability to do that, or are we going to miss the chance to get even worse? Lawrence, are you optimistic?
Oh, you know me, I'm always very optimistic. Everything comes to those that wait. And, you know, I'm not in any rush. You know, yes, I'm missing my job. I should be, you know, we should be talking and celebrating the biggest games of the club season right here, right now. But, you know, I do feel that the sport is at has got the ability to come out the other side much better off if we get some real leadership from the top and we all get together and work out how that happens. So I'm optimistic. If it was up to me, we'd end lockdown a lot less cautiously than we're trying to at the moment. But that's just me. I'm a bit of a risk taker. You know, I think you listen to scientists and no one's agreeing. You listen to governments around the world, no one's agreeing. 8 weeks ago, everyone told me this is a disease that everyone's going to catch. Well, you know, we've got to get out there and catch it and recover from it, you know, quite frankly, because I do think we are strong enough to recover from it. You know, I'd like to see things speeded up rather than slowed down.
Yeah, Lawrence for president, well, I say. Come on, Lawrence for president. I'm with him all the way. Come on, Lawrence. We tried to press you into administration and you're just refusing to do it.
I'm not the minister. Unfortunately, as you can tell, I say things that people don't want to hear.
Isn't that our dream team? Mark Evans and Lawrence Allaglio, and then we'll just end up doing the rough on our own without them.
We'll give Stuart the last word. Stuart, you've been very, very exercised the last few days about Johnson and Cummins. You've been really on the barricades there, commentating about these two guys. Can I put a question to you about Cummins and Johnson?
You can, Steve.
Do you rate Pat Cummins and Mitchell Johnson as one of the great Australian bowling attacks?
I was thinking we were going to talk about Cummins, the honey bear. Do you remember the winger?
Oh, yeah.
Western Australia winger. I think he'd do a better job advising Johnson than this Cummins, and I would much prefer Mitchell Johnson, Michael Johnson, or Martin Johnson, and I'm talking about the writer, not the player, leading the country than Boris Johnson. So that's my take on that.
So the hands of Martin Johnson, the player, it's all in his hands, together with the hairy, scruffy bikers. They're the people taking us through. Thank you for listening to The Ruck. Thank you to Stuart and to Lawrence and to Owen. We'll still be going all throughout the lockdown and come out the other end, God willing. And thanks to Million for listening to us.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.